From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. If you're listening this morning during your daily commute, whether in a car, bus, or train, you're in the right seat to hear a moving conversation. First, we speak with transportation expert Christoph Spieler, who emphasizes that transit systems should be designed to serve riders, not the egos of savvy, well-intended urban planners.
Good transit isn't measured by infrastructure, it's measured by service. It's not a question of, is there a track there? It's a question of, is there a train coming?
Plus, we hear from Don Fry, president of the Greater Baltimore Committee, about what's missing in state transportation funding when it comes to the needs of the Baltimore region. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Light rail, bus, train, monorail, commuter rail, they're all different modes of the same thing, moving people from where they are to where they want to go. This week, the Maryland Department of Transportation released a six-year capital funding plan for the region. Later in the show, Don Fry, president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee, will tell us about it and how you can participate in a conversation about transportation infrastructure needs and funding. Joining us now to paint a picture of what the ideal transit system for a city can look like is structural engineer and urban planner Christoph Spieler. Spieler has visited and analyzed transit systems in every state in the U.S. He wrote a book about it called Trains, Buses, People, an Opinionated Atlas of U.S. Transit. He's also a member of the American Public Transit Association's Sustainability and Urban Design Working Group, which drafts national standards on transit and urban design. He's joining us by phone from the engineering firm where he works, Hewitt Zollars in Houston, Texas. Welcome, Christoph.
Happy to be on.
From your research, you have an international perspective when it comes to transit. How does the U.S. compare with other countries as far as transit use?
Generally, if you compare the United States not just to the likes of Europe and Japan, but even to Canada, we have relatively underdeveloped transit systems and relatively low transit use. I would also say that in a lot of the cities, even in the United States, where transit is the most useful and the land use patterns best suit transit, places like New York City, I think a lot of our transit systems are actually in a very bad state of repair, as Washington, D.C. has been struggling with. So generally, our transit is underfunded and underdeveloped pretty much across the board.
And when you say relatively low transit use, how low?
It varies greatly. And I think one of the things that really is important in the book is there are places in every major metropolitan area where transit works well and where if we provide good transit, people will use it. I mean, people think of Houston as a very car-oriented city, for example, but a third of the people who work in downtown Houston use transit. So it's always wrong to look at a metro area as a whole and say, you know, this is transit-friendly or this isn't, because it varies dramatically on where you are. And I think that's true everywhere. That's true in Baltimore. There are some places where transit is very competitive and very useful, and there's other places where transit doesn't work well at all.
In general, though, why is mass transit less popular in the U.S. than other countries? You mentioned poor repair. Is that part of it?
Well, I think the biggest is simply we don't offer the service. I mean, the key to whether people use transit or not is, does the transit go to where they want to go? Will it get them there reasonably quickly? How long will they have to wait? And how reliable will it be? And that's the basis of all transit. Good transit goes to places you want to go. It goes there frequently. It goes there reliably. It goes there quickly. And for the most part, in a lot of places, we aren't providing that. Where we are, people are absolutely using it. So I don't think there's any kind of innate cultural difference between the United States and other places. I think in large part it's we simply haven't invested in good service. And I really want to make that distinction because it's not a question, good transit isn't measured by infrastructure, it's measured by service. It's not a question of, is there a track there? It's a question of, is there a train coming? And we tend to concentrate a lot on technological differences. We talk about buses versus trains a lot, for example. But what really matters to passengers is things like frequency, is things like, where does this actually go?
Yeah, let me ask you to take us into your book a bit. Your book begins with elements that went into shaping and developing transit in the U.S., like politics and funding sources. But then you talk about the basics of designing a successful transit. So tell us about some of those basics.
Well, the first one is density. It's a good transit system goes where people are. And that really matters, and it matters to a fine scale, because when people get off of transit, they're walking. So you need that transit station to be within a quarter mile of where they're trying to go. And if we want to make a successful transit system, you need to take it to the places where the most people are, and you need to take it to the places where the most people are going, which is also the idea of activity centers, that every city has not just a downtown, but other centers of activity that lots of people are traveling to. And those include hospitals, those include secondary employment centers, those include universities. You want to connect those. And so once you get transit in the right place, then you need to make sure it's walkable. Because every transit trip is a walking or biking trip on at least one end, and all successful transit systems, high ridership systems, are all dependent on people walking to transit. And so that means you need direct paths, it means you need a safe pedestrian environment, it means you need to build stations in a way that they are really well connected to their surroundings. And you have to have a connected system. You have to realize that you're never designing one transit line at a time, that every rail route, every bus route works because it connects to other routes. And having a system where it is easy to connect from one route to another, where those connections happen in convenient places, where those connections are comfortable, where those connections are scheduled, is what makes it work as a system. And then for each of the individual routes, the absolute key is frequency. How often does that bus come? Because that is the difference of transit being there when you need it to be there, or you having to plan your life around transit. If you're on a bus route that runs once an hour, you may have a choice of being 5 minutes late or 55 minutes early. You have to plan your life around when that bus is there. Whereas if that bus runs every 15 minutes, every 10 minutes, every 5 minutes, it's just there when you need it. You can just show up to a stop and know it will be there. And the next travel time, we need that transit to get you there in a reasonable amount of time. And that includes things like rail lines, but it's also things like bus lanes. It's things like traffic signal priority. And frequency and getting the stations in the right places are also ways to help travel time, because ultimately that trip is a door-to-door trip. And what matters is how long it takes you to get from door to door. And it's not just time, it's also reliability, that people will not take transit if they can't depend on it getting them there when they've been told it will get them there. And then the final thing, which I think people often don't think about that much, is legibility. A good transit system is easy to understand. We have a tendency to design a lot of transit systems for people who make the exact same trip at the exact same time every day. You look at things like bus schedules, even commuter rail schedules, and you see these like really complex schedules where the 5:30 train does something different than the 6 o'clock train. That works if you're always taking the 5:30 train, you have time to use it. But if you're a new rider, or if you're a rider who makes trips to different places every day, if a system is hard to understand, you're probably not going to use it. And all of those things hold in a city of any size. They all hold for any mode of transit. And what we can see across the United States is when cities, when systems get this right, they get higher ridership.
That's Christoph Spieler, urban planner and engineer with Hewitt Zollars in Houston, Texas, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about what cities need to design effective transit systems. Spieler is also senior lecturer at Rice University, where he teaches transportation in the architecture and engineering schools. How do cities miss the mark on this? How does the planning get off track?
I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I think one thing I would say the biggest reason is we need to talk more about what makes transit good, and we need to come from the standpoint of a rider. I think often we tend to think of transit as infrastructure projects rather than service. We get excited by ribbon cuttings rather than how something works day to day. And we often, very often, have the wrong conversation. Like, if I ever hear a conversation in a city which starts with City X needs a streetcar, I don't think that's a useful conversation. I think it's very useful to say we have a corridor between the university and the medical school that needs a faster, more reliable, more frequent transit corridor, and maybe a streetcar is the right way to do that. Like, that's a much more useful conversation. We don't talk enough about what our goals are. And then there's a whole series of things we do wrong in terms of how we make decisions. Like, one of the things we do a lot is we tend to build transit where it is easy or where there is little opposition to it. You will say, here's an existing rail corridor, it's easy to build something here, without asking the question of, does that rail corridor actually go to where people are trying to go? And you will often see projects get blocked because there is local opposition to those projects. And it's really important to understand why neighborhoods are concerned about a project. It's really important to deal with those concerns. But fundamentally, if you're building good transit, you're building it in the middle of dense places where lots of people are. You're not building it in easy places. And I would say my rule of transit is that if you ever have a project that nobody is opposed to, it's actually probably a sign it's a bad project. And a lot of this is driven, like I said, by not thinking about the rider perspective. It's amazing the degree to which transit boards, even leaderships at transit agencies, even transit consultants, don't actually use transit themselves, don't actually understand how it works. This is not hard. Transit planning is actually pretty simple. And what makes good transit work, like I outlined, it's anybody who rides transit understands this, but we often don't follow through on that because we don't stay focused on what the riders actually need.
What cities in the U.S. do you hold up as doing this well?
I mean, I'll throw out a couple examples. I think if I think of which U.S. cities have been most transformed by transit over the last 50 years, I think Washington, D.C. is at the top of that list. It's hard to imagine D.C. without the metro. And that's because they did some really smart thinking about where to build it and how to build it. They put stations right in the middle of things, and then they did a lot of good planning afterwards about using those stations to focus development so that it's not just within D.C. itself, but in the Maryland suburbs and the Virginia suburbs, where you see that there's been whole new activity centers built around those stations, which put transit in the center of all of these jobs, all of this retail, all of these places to live. So I look at D.C. and I see a region that has really been transformed around transit to become a place where transit is an integral part of what makes it work. If I look around the United States right now, a couple cities that are doing things really well is, I think, the Twin Cities. Minneapolis-St. Paul are doing a really good job of, they've built some really smart rail lines, but they've also done a really good job of focusing on local bus, on making a really good, well-connected bus network with a lot of frequent service. And there's also smaller cities. Richmond, Virginia just redesigned their entire bus system and built a new bus rapid transit line that's now the spine of their entire system. Indianapolis just opened a really nice bus rapid transit line. So it's not just the big cities. There's also small ones doing really good work.
As I mentioned, you visited and rated transit systems in all 50 states. Baltimore gets just a few mentions. What's your take on Baltimore's transit system?
Well, I mean, I think Baltimore is a city which can be a great transit city. The land use patterns in Baltimore, those historic walkable neighborhoods that make up a lot of the city, are places where transit can work really well. And I think there's definitely examples in Baltimore of transit working well. But part of what we see in Baltimore, if you compare it to D.C., is there hasn't been the same kind of long-term follow-through on planning. D.C. took several decades to build out their system with a sort of consistent plan. And what we've seen in Baltimore is a lot more, there's a plan, you follow through on a bit of it, then you stop doing it, then you adopt a different plan, which is why this kind of long-range planning that the region is engaging right now is so important. And Baltimore, actually, if you look at the map of bus service, Baltimore has better frequent bus service than D.C. does, that thanks to the implementation of Baltimore Link. But it's right. I mean, if you look at some of the rail infrastructure, for example, you have a light rail line that was built in a valley rather than where the destinations are, and so that you have a lot of stations which don't have an awful lot around them. And, I mean, I've been really happy to see Baltimore focus on things like making the bus network better. But there's clearly a lot of work to do and a lot of potential to do it. And I think having the right conversations right now is what's going to lead to that.
Thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm excited that these conversations are happening on the radio and that people care about this, because that's the first step to making better transit.
One hopes. Christoph Spieler, urban planner and engineer with the firm Hewitt Zollers in Houston, Texas. We've been talking about what's necessary for effective mass transit design. Now, a short break, and then we'll ask Don Fry, CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee, about transportation priorities for the Baltimore region. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR, become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're stuck in a traffic jam or waiting for a bus that's late, glad you're with us. Today we're talking about transportation. We just spoke with the national transit planning expert, Christoph Spieler, about how to design effective and efficient public transit for a city. Now we're joined by Don Fry, who's been president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee since 2002. The GBC works to improve the business climate of the Greater Baltimore region by mobilizing people to develop solutions to problems. One of the most urgent issues is transportation. If you'd like to weigh in on the discussion, GBC is hosting a transportation summit open to the public this coming Monday, September 9th, at 8 a.m. From 1991 to 97, Fry served in the House of Delegates, where he sat on the Ways and Means Committee and on the Appropriations Committee. In the Maryland Senate, the following 2 years, he was a member of the Budget and Taxation Committee. Welcome to On the Record, Don.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
In a commentary in the Baltimore Business Journal last month, you wrote that Maryland's transportation policy and funding decisions, quote, underscore a pattern of disinvestment in the Greater Baltimore region, one of the state's key economic drivers, close quote. But you added, quote, the good news is that a key planning process is underway that provides an opportunity to turn this lack of investment around, close quote. Talk about that plan. What is it?
I think the Baltimore region is at a pivotal point right now in transportation and transportation planning. Back in 2015, we seemed to be on the right path because there was plans for a red line, a light rail line that ran from West Baltimore, Social Security, through Baltimore City over to Bayview Hospital, that would actually connect with the light rail lines and the metro line that runs north and south. It was the first east-west line that would exist in this area. Unfortunately, Governor Hogan chose not to move forward with that red line. After 13 years of really advocating for that, GBC very much involved in that effort with the state of Maryland, the federal government. In fact, the federal government had determined that the red line was two of the six transit projects that should be moving forward, had provided $900 million for the red line project. Unfortunately, Governor Hogan decided not to move forward with that initiative, chose to return the $900 million back to the federal government, and the red line did not move forward. When that was taken off the table, there really was no major transit initiative for the Baltimore region to move forward, other than a $135 million project called the Link Project, Baltimore Link Project, which really was a revamping of the bus lines in the area. So we've sort of been in a holding pattern, waiting for any additional plans. The good news I referenced in that commentary is that there is a Central Maryland Region Transit plan that has to be developed by October 2020. According to the state legislature, and it would be a plan that lays out what our transit plans would be over the next 25 years in this area, in the Central Maryland region. So we're sort of at the starting gate, or maybe the launching pad of what may be really the future of transportation and transit in this region.
There was another report released this week, the 2020-2025 Consolidated Transportation Program. Briefly, what is that?
Yeah, every year the state of Maryland has to issue a six-year capital plan laying out how they're going to move forward with transportation projects in all different modes, whether it be State Highway Administration, the Maryland Transit Administration, Maryland Port Administration, the airport, any of those modes, and they lay out a six-year plan talking about how they're going to spend their money over the next 6 years. What they released on September 1st was the draft consolidated transportation plan for fiscal years 2020 through 2025, the next six fiscal years.
So it's a funding document.
It's a funding document, although really it's more of a priority document because it lays out the priorities, the project priorities that the state sees it moving forward with in transportation. But it does, again, provide the costs that they attribute to the various stages of those projects. And ultimately, the legislature, through passing of the Maryland Department of Transportation's budget during the General Assembly session, in effect, does approve the CTP at that time.
Well, in your view, are the needs of the Baltimore region better addressed?
Well, I think the major concern that we have when we look at this consolidated transportation plan is in the area of transit. One of the things that happened recently prior to the CTP coming out was a capital needs report that came from the MTA, Maryland Transportation and Transit Administration, that said that over the next 10 years, there was a $2 billion backlog in project funding that they needed just to maintain and preserve the existing system. No new projects, just to maintain and preserve. When we look at this six-year plan, there's $345 million less in the six-year plan from 20 to 25 for transit than there was in 2019 to 2024 six-year plan. So we see a significant drop-off in transit, which certainly gives an indication that transit is not going to be the top priority of the Maryland Transit Administration of getting any new projects done over that period of time.
So transit will not be the top priority of the Maryland Transit Administration?
It's not going to be the top priority of the Department of Transportation, of which the Transit Administration is a part of.
That's Greater Baltimore Committee President and CEO Don Fry here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He's talking about statewide transportation planning that's underway. GBC is hosting a summit to discuss the Greater Baltimore region's transportation priorities this coming Monday at 8 a.m. What's happening at the summit?
With the summit, we have presenters looking at sort of the state of transportation infrastructure funding across the country and also locally. So we have the former U.S. Secretary of Transportation, Rodney Slater, coming to talk about what he sees from a national or federal perspective of what's happening in transportation, and also maybe what's not happening at the federal level in transportation and how states are reacting. We'll also hear from Kevin Quinn. Kevin is the administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. He'll talk about this capital needs survey that was done that talked about how much money is needed to preserve and maintain the existing system and the backlogs that they have in that area. And then we'll hear from Mike Kelly, who is the executive director of the Baltimore Metropolitan Council, or the Baltimore Region Transportation Board, which is a group of the leaders in the region, the elected leaders in the region, and they've laid out a 45-year plan of what they see happening in the future in this Baltimore region from a transportation perspective.
So what do you hope this summit accomplishes?
Well, I think a lot of what we're hoping to do is try to really invigorate people to get involved in this process. This is a unique opportunity when, for the first time in quite some time, we actually have a commission who's going to be working on a plan and making recommendations for a plan of what's going to happen in this region. We want people to understand that this is an opportunity for them to come forward. We want to make sure that any plan that comes out is bold but also actionable. We want to make sure that that has short, medium, and long-term objectives. We want to make sure that any plan includes actually a timetable for when projects will be done. To have that accomplished, we're going to need really advocacy from the business community, from employers, from transit riders, from commuters, to really let people know at the state level that this is a significant issue.
Thanks a lot for walking us through this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Don Fry is president and CEO of the Greater Baltimore Committee. We've been talking about state plans for transportation projects and what they mean for Baltimore. You can add your voice to the discussion at the GBC 2019 Transportation Summit this coming Monday, September 9th, 8 to 9:30 a.m. It's at the Baltimore Marriott Inner Harbor at Camden Yards, 110 South Utah Street. We have a link to price and registration information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.